Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Black culture through the complicated lens of agriculture. We speak to Carla Hall about her uncompromising soul food recipes.
And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I changing my family's history for another culture?
We also hear from Gabriela Rodriguez at Harlem Grown's Youth Farm Uptown.
About empowerment and, you know, community resilience building through this work. Food is kind of just a vehicle.
Leah Penniman addresses feeling like an outsider in the farming community.
I could count on my two hands the number of people who appeared to be POC, people of color. Mm-hmm. And so I literally would go around little slips of paper and say, hey, meet at 1 o'clock under this tree so we can talk.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Taichi Manabe, who is the Chief Operating Officer of a Food Hub, which is a unique project to revive the shrinking community in Shikoku Island of Japan through food. And Taichi wanted to change the world through design, but he realized that food has a bigger and a stronger influence for his purpose. So he has gotten involved in multiple fascinating food-themed projects before he became the COO of Food Hub. So today we will discuss why food is important for our community and a very interesting project Taichi has been involved in. But before we start, Japan Needs is available on Heritage Radio Network website as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatema.com. Now let's start our conversation with Taichi Manabe. Hello, Taichi. Welcome to Japan Needs.
Thank you for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about, so let's jump in. First of all, let's talk about your background and where you're from and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm from Japan and Shikoku Island called Ehime, and I grew up there. And when I was little, I was eating, my father fishes a lot, so whatever he captures, we just simply grill or boil or with the salt. Was kind of the regular things that we eat.
That's a regular, the most local and sustainable thing. That's a regular thing.
But it's kind of his... crazy about fishing. So, mm-hmm. And my grandfather had a small farm and always grew a lot of vegetables and raised eggs too, chicken.
Mm.
So we had always fresh things around, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. So it sounds like you had a foundation of the good food when you
I guess so.
Right. Okay. And you have a very strong background in design. So could you tell us about where you studied design and where you have worked so far?
Okay. I thought design is just not a forms. and the colors. It's like a higher context that I believe in. So I wanted to study in university in United States. I did study. And I worked, well, I wanted to become a like product designer, but I didn't have a sense, I think. So I find that out. So I choose the job to work with designers and creators. So I was in the advertisement agency for over 10 years. I still am working for the advertisement business.
Interesting. I'm curious, you know, you said the context, not just the form, but the context. What do you mean by that?
Like, design is everywhere. You touch it. This is a chair. It's designed by someone's work. So I think it's design is not just a form, so it's everywhere. So it's hard to explain, but so I like kind of that concept of design, way of the thinking of the design. So I wanted to learn about or use to make a society better,
right?
Kind of.
Yeah, that's kind of an industrial design kind of idea. Like, you have a need, you have a lifestyle, and here you are. There's right. something functional.
Right.
Maybe it's related to food too.
Now I think so. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. The you wanted to change the world with the power design, right?
So I don't know if I said that aloud.
Okay, I quoted from something I read.
Okay. Yes. About that. Why?
Yeah. Well, if you think. You said it at some point.
Right.
Do you remember why you said it?
World is... I'm a really negative person, I think,
okay.
inside.
Okay.
And the world is kind of surrounded by kind of... how do you say it? Kind of un... it's hard to say it.
Yeah. But, it's like not somebody's destroying something, that kind of negativity?
No. It's like unfairness. A lot of unfairness in society, I think, I feel. When I look at it.
Are you talking about America now? Or?
No, kind of. Well, in Japan also. But I just didn't want to be a person just complaining about it. I want to just make a difference. So I thought design will be the kind of way to look at the society or the community. So I, yeah, that's kind of the thing that I wanted to do.
Sounds like your mind is always related to the surroundings and community and human elements.
I think so. It's like we have to pass on whatever we are built on or... whatever we have to our next generation, to our kids.
Right, plus or minus, either way.
Either way, but I want to make it a little better if I'm involved in that community or society. So I don't know, I look at that way, the right. society.
Well, I think human responsibility.
I don't know, it's like too big of the things right. to talk about it, but I...
Yeah, that's another whole episode, I guess. Yeah. Okay, and but you shifted your focus from design to food, and now you are the CEO at the Food Hub project. So we will talk about the Food Hub project in a moment, but how did you get involved in food in the first place?
It was 2011, the huge earthquake hit in Tohoku, Japan. And it was such a disaster moment. And I was in Tokyo, I could not do anything about it. But I was thinking, you know, want to help them or do something with it. But all the chefs from California, who was in the middle, was a Japanese former chef, Jerome Wag, was a friend of mine. And they wanted to come do an event called Open Harvest in Japan. And I coordinated their trip and their event.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of only one to speak English and has a like skill of coordinating the event.
Mm.
So I was kind of jumped in the middle.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you already friend with Jerome.
Oh, no, I wasn't actually. Okay. Yuri Nomura,
mm-hmm.
who is food director of that project called E-Trip.
Mm-hmm.
And she was friend with the person I was working for.
Okay.
And, they kind of pointed me to take over the project.
Right. So just step aside, you know, the sounds like I found the name of Yuri Nomura when I was preparing for this show. And E-Trip, it's a restaurant in Harajuku, Tokyo.
Right.
But also she has a lot of bunch of interesting food-themed events.
Yes. So. E-Trip was the movie title. So like eating as a, like travel or a trip.
Mm.
So E-Trip. And that was a movie about like small producers in Japan. And she was director of the movie.
Mm.
And she made a restaurant called E-Trip. After that,
mm-hmm.
and then she does all kinds of food related projects,
mm.
and we do some together also.
Okay,
yes.
So sounds like her theme is also food that's something good for the society,
yes, and the community, I think.
Okay, right, so so the Open Harvest that you worked with Jerome Warg on, so
yes.
What was it?
Open Harvest was an event that created by that team called Open Restaurant. And there were Jerome Varg and other like community people, artists and chefs in California, Bay Area. And Open Restaurant is the kind of the project that using format of restaurant and taking that like society problem out through the food,
mm-hmm.
they try to give the message through the food. That makes sense.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does,
okay.
And to me at least. But
okay.
Mm. So the food is a medium,
yes.
for communication,
right?
And
they use kind of a restaurant format to deliver the society like social problems and messages through the format of restaurant or like dinner events,
okay,
etc. So
right, so put the agenda that has to be discussed.
Yes, and Open Harvest was the time of after the earthquake, so we just met a bunch of producers. We tested radiation for food, etc. So it was like a big event in Tokyo.
Mm. Right. Okay. So that was a one-time event, or does?
It was one-time event. They stayed like 3 weeks researching and meeting the small producers and putting like cooking classes, doing a lot of events within 3 weeks.
Mm.
But we kept the relationship, obviously, because I'm here in New York. Is kind of we kept the relationship since 2011.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I heard that the Open Harvest has ended, kind of ended, but it led to the beginning of a new project called Nomadic Kitchen.
Yes.
So what is it?
Nomadic Kitchen is the project that creating small producers community around Japan. We travel and do kind of events together. And it's I support the chefs to travel on and organize that event.
Mm.
So there's five chefs mainly involved,
mm-hmm.
in that project.
Right. So what's the theme of a Nomadic Kitchen?
Theme is creating community, I guess. Well, for example, in Japan, like farmers, it's really hard to connect with other farmers, for example, in another area, or connect with chefs and other like food related people. So we try to connect them together in different areas, and I don't know, try to make a better food community or society together.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you have an example of
events?
Mm-hmm.
One time, Jerome wanted to do dinner that comes from one farm, And we had a really hard time coordinating that. But with one farmer's, you know, collaboration, we...
Which area, which region?
It's in Nara.
Okay.
And one of that restaurant we rented and, no, like, collaborated.
Mm.
And one small farmer did give us a lot of, like, everything from around that area.
Mm.
So he was doing the duck, duck? Raising with the rice, with a duck.
Uh-huh. Oh, the feed was... the rice-fed duck?
Aigamo noho.
Ah.
It's like, so duck eats the bugs, mm-hmm, and the weed in the rice field.
Mm-hmm.
So we use that rice from last year, and we use that duck also as a meat.
It's kind of a recycled system.
Yes, and we created a plate for that concept.
Right.
Or a whole, like... menus.
That's literally sustainable.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Yes.
Well, I heard that, you know, the cow eat the grass.
Yeah.
And the poop.
Yeah.
You know, the
it does recycle,
is,
yes.
Right. The lamb and the chicken, that kind of, that's the same idea.
Kind of.
Right. So, but is it, you know, I understand that, you know, they're supposed to, the Kyoto vegetables or, you know, there's a local specific, you know, vegetables or produce,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, like the duck here tastes differently from that one, the kind of thing.
Yes.
So that's the theme of Nomadic
Kitchen. It's not exactly, but it is led to what I do right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's like, it's not delivering to the bigger market,
mm-hmm,
we try to consume as much as possible in local.
Right.
So I think the Nomadic Kitchen kind of brought out that concept also, what we did.
Right. So Nomadic Kitchen, basically, it's more like leadership to inspire the movement
kind of,
other chefs.
Yes, yes.
Right. I looked at the five chefs' background. They spend time in Italy or Bordeaux, or they have very diverse global background.
Right.
So that's interesting.
They're interested in to travel, eager to meet small producers everywhere. So we travel together and do events.
Mm.
Yes.
Isn't it European mindset to have closer relationships with the farmers and the local producers?
I think so. Because, well, it's common in Italy, I think.
Mm.
But it's more chefs are interested meet producers in Japan also.
Mm. Yes. Right, because it's guaranteed high quality. And also,
yes,
right, and you support precious farmers.
If we don't have a producer, we don't have food.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
Chefs think the same way, I
guess. So recently, do you think that Japanese chefs are more aware of the importance of those local farmers, small farmers?
Yeah, I think they're getting more aware of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Great. That is great. I think it's a global movement.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm. So I guess just undo whatever the last 60, 70 years we've done.
Yes.
Right. That's great. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we'll discuss Taichi's unique and inspiring project at Food Hub, which is located in a small town with a population of under 5,000. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese Broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Taichi Manabe, who is the Chief Operating Officer of Food Hub, a unique project to revive the shrinking community in Shikoku Island of Japan through food. So in 2014, you moved to a small town called Kamiyama in Tokushima Prefecture in Shikoku Island. And like I said earlier, the population of Kamiyama is under 5,000. So why did you move to Kamiyama?
To be accurate, it's 5,300 people okay. lives right now.
Oh, wow. So it's yeah. increased.
No, it's not. It didn't increase. It's just decreasing so fast. But okay. right
so
now,
the
at this
wiki
moment,
was like 4,700. Oh,
really?
Like that.
Yeah, no,
it's corrected.
Not. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Why did I move to Kamiyama?
Yep.
Well, I was doing like a nomadic kitchen event in Tokyo, travel to countryside. It was kind of not daily thing for me. It was 非日常って何て言うんですか?
非日常. It's not a part of daily life.
Right.
It's so like an
event, always. Mm. And I wanted to do something related more like daily, normal life through food.
Mm-hmm.
So in Tokyo, it's far from the farm, far from the producers.
Mm.
So I want to reconnect to the kind of ground. So I wanted to move back to Shikoku because I'm where I'm from.
Mm. And the next prefecture.
Yes, I'm from.
Mm.
That's kind of the reason.
Right. And it's randomly, if I had that, you know, opportunity to consider, I could move here. But is there any reason that you just decided this is the place?
Oh, you mean Kamiyama?
Yeah.
Long story short, there was not many like restaurants or small grocery stores. So there wasn't like enough food place there.
Mm.
So I thought I wanted to be not the consuming side. I wanted to be a producing side.
Mm.
If it's like full of like restaurants, good, you know, grocery store, I don't have to do anything.
Mm.
I just be a consumer there.
Mm.
So it wasn't like that in Kamiyama.
Mm.
So I thought I would be able to contribute to the food community there.
Mm. Right. So that was a time you already had a good experience with Nomadic Kitchen.
Yes, with about. Chefs, yes.
Right. So you had a vision that you wanted to do something.
Kind of, yes. Mm.
Well, that's how you got involved in the local government's project to revive the community?
Yes. Japanese government put the policy, you say? Beginning of that year. And local government had to make a plan to how to revitalize the local community.
Mm.
So I was involved in that program and I just raised a hand to do our food part.
Okay, so yes. By the way, were there many other, or is there some other people moving into the Kamiyama?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So they're really active to revive the community already?
I don't know how you consider, you know, active or not active. It's very countryside.
Mm.
So, but there's a young people moving in to the town and do some creative things in our town.
Right.
Yeah, very many small producers.
Mm.
Yes.
So I'm curious. So the town offered some incentives, like.
Actually, no.
No.
Some other town does. Give a lot of incentives to move, but Kamiyama is very unique. They don't do that.
Mm.
So it's really long story, but yeah, it's unique about it.
Right. So the Kamiyama is so beautiful and a wonderful place to live. People just decided, well, I didn't know, let's move.
I don't know. There's a kind of creative atmosphere that town has. And there's unique, very unique, all the people group that coordinates all those projects.
Mm. By younger generation.
Yes, but they're so attractive, what they do. They just want to have fun, want to make a creative, like, town, you know, they want to enjoy, their life.
Right. So at some point, some group of young people came in and created that foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like a magnet.
Yeah.
Attracts someone like you.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Right. So more like artist community.
Yes, it is.
Right. Wow. Okay. And now you are the CEO of Food Hub.
Yes.
Based in Kamiyama. So what is Food Hub?
Food Hub is...
Yeah. Well, actually, you were involved in the government in activity. And then let's talk about how Food Hub was born in the first place.
In the first place.
Yeah.
Well, in that group, there's he still works in the city, town hall. And he's originally from that town. And his grandfather is a farmer and his father is a farmer also. But he works for the city. And I met him. And we had some similar concept of he's like connecting small produce and a small consuming process. Mm. He had idea, and I had idea of kind of farm local, eat local, we call.
Mm.
And he was looking at from the farming side. I'm looking from the chef or like eating side.
Mm.
So we met and. We created a concept of Food Hub.
Mm.
But a Food Hub word itself made by USDA in United States. So I kind of borrowed the word, an idea, and made it localized in like local side of Japan.
Mm.
So
right. Yeah, I saw on the website there's a link to American government.
Yes.
Really big PDF documents.
Yeah, it is. I read it, a part of it.
Right. Yeah, so yeah, that's a very universal, attractive mindset. Right. Okay, so what is the Food Hub? What kind of activities do you have?
We do a lot of kind of activity, but we are a farm company. We have a young farmer of 4 farmers who are moved to Kamiyama. Three of them are moved to Kamiyama to farm.
Mm.
And that's the core. We try to pass on the agriculture in our local town to the younger generations.
Mm. By the way, what kind of farm products are they growing?
We do grow rice. We do grow, heirloom wheat that passed on over 70 years. We kind of re-harvested.
Wow.
And we grow a lot of vegetables for our restaurants. That's the main thing that we do as a farm.
Right.
Yes. So we operate the restaurant and bakery and the production kitchen to make like some ketchup and those kind of kitchens. And we have a food education team. And we collaborate with local elementary school, junior high school.
Mm.
All those ages of kids.
Wow, from that young age.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. And so your website has some pictures on the menu of, the restaurant.
Yeah.
I was so excited to see all the dishes.
Really? Thank you.
Yeah, so it's beautiful, all local.
A lot of vegetables we serve. Mm-hmm. It's a buffet style. We serve every day 5 kinds of dishes with the main and rice and the miso soup.
Mm.
So like everybody eats the same menu. So
like a family.
Yeah, it is a family meal. So yeah, right. But the menu changes every day.
Right, and also you have the statistics of how much local you achieved.
Yes.
And in the dead of winter, you still have like 60%.
Yes. Yes. We calculate only the lunchtime every day.
Mm.
And the ingredients are about, last year was like 54% of that local town itself. But if I consider prefecture, it will probably go up to like 90%, 80 to 90%.
Wow. Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I've
try hard.
But I've never been to Shikoku, which is a beautiful island.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I keep hearing great things.
Please come.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yes. Yeah. Right. And so you have the bakery and you bake and sell to local people.
We do use Japanese wheat, but our wheat is not enough production yet. So, but we do have 100% we use our wheat. Bread data uses our wheat only also.
Yes. Right. And who are the customers at the restaurant and the bakery?
Especially bakery, a local, like all kind of ages, like 90 years old lady to young kids is our customer.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm sure they didn't have that kind of, you know, luxury of have local bakery.
True. It's we do use natural, like sourdough-based bread. And Japanese likes softer bread.
Right. Cushy soft bread.
We call shokupan. It's a white bread, you call.
Right. Yeah.
So we our main focus is shokupan, so that everyone... white bread. Everyone loves to eat every day. We do focus on eating rice also, but bread is in our culture in so deep already. So it's not a mass-produced bread. So we wanted like smaller scale bread.
That's interesting that I didn't know that there's a the local heirloom wheat in Shikoku. That's very interesting.
I don't know that real definition of heirloom, but it's passed on over 70 years in our farm officer's house.
Okay.
So I think we can consider that heirloom.
Right. Okay. And by the way, you are granted the Good Design Award from the Japanese government.
Yes.
Good Design last year, in 2018. So what kind of a design you are?
Well, we consider food hub as ecosystem of circulating like production and consuming in a smaller scale area. So we enter that as an ecosystem of the food and agriculture and food culture.
Right.
Yes.
That makes sense because if you have ecosystem, you don't have to worry about, you know, the traffic, transportation.
Yes, yes. That's the most costly part and you know, decrease the taste of the ingredient also if you travel. So we try to produce it and consume it in our town and with the local people. And you are more than welcome to visit us and eat with us.
Right.
Also,
that'd be awesome, right? Yes. Yeah, but actually, you know, the word blue zone, like all the people who lives longer and longer on average, like, you know, those people tend to have local, the same thing even. People say eat diverse food, but if you have a good local product, same thing all over, you tend to live longer.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Well, we have so many variations of vegetables already, in the mountain vegetable in the spring season also. It's so full of really great ingredients, local.
Right. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so the another thing, which is very interesting, that Kamiyama offers a great program called the Chef in Residence. So what is it?
Chef in Residence, we kind of made it up in Food Hub. In Kamiyama, there's an artist in residence the local people organize over 20 years. So we kind of borrow that idea of a concept that if chef stays, and it will probably make a difference a lot. So I kind of made it up.
Right. So what kind of you know? I'm sure you already invited chefs.
Right. There's chef named Dave Gould from a Brooklyn restaurant called Romans. And
awesome. By Andrew Talos.
Yes. He quit that restaurant last year. And he has been staying with us around, like almost a year.
Wow.
He's going and out and traveling with Andrew in between that. But we just offer a place for him to stay and some food. And we just travel together and do some events in our place also. So it's kind of like exchanging what he has and what we have. So like it's just
right
exchanging program.
So he's now acting as an ambassador.
Yes.
For Kamiyama.
Yeah.
Right. So travel means he travel with you and cook at events outside Kamiyama?
Also, yes, also outside of Kamiyama. So we traveled to Kagoshima, did the outside outdoor event for 200 people for dinner with only a local product.
Mm.
So I coordinated that event for him also.
Right. So it's a transplantable, that's a, you know, the good design ecosystem that you can really educate people.
I think so. Mm. Yeah, it's not a hard thing to do, but people has tendency to look outside of you, not like bottom of you.
Right. So interesting that, you know, someone like David Gold, who has completely objective view to Japanese ingredients. So do you think it's a benefit to have American, well, you know, non-Japanese chef to cook local food?
Yes, because it's like a learning experience for each other, I think. He learns a lot. We learn a lot also. Mm. He cooks Italian food. It's like a similar concept of like slow food. Mm. So, yes, we do have a lot of like exchange.
Nice.
Yes.
Mm. So, any other chef that you want to mention? I'm curious.
Oh, who came, you mean?
Yeah.
Danny Newberg. He was sous chef at Estela before.
Oh, wow.
I think. He came for about a month.
Mm.
And he was actually the first one before David Gold. And he came. And I think he's coming back this... He tried to come back again.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Mm.
Well... Yes, that's about it.
So, so what's the who can participate? I'm sure some of our listeners are interested in.
Right, we don't have specific rules or programs yet, so just you can email me, email us, and if you're interested, well, they can come.
Right. So basically, someone's ready to move for a long time.
Like, right.
You know, 6 months or...
You need a visa to do that. But yes, we are ready to, I guess, take. Well, you need some skills, of course, of cooking.
Okay, so that you can get the visa for whoever wants to participate?
We don't have visa, offering visa. Oh. Just a travel visa.
Mm.
So like you have to travel... Within 3 months, I think. You can only stay 3 months.
Yes. Right.
Mm. So we don't exchange money or anything, just experiences.
Right,
so.
The place to experience and inspire each other.
Yes.
That's ideal.
Yeah.
So someone who has time to review your life or reconsider something.
Yes, you know, that's exactly the kind of idea. It's not just a travel. We can really connect to the local people.
Mm.
And you can really see Japan in a different perspective.
Mm.
You can, like, it's easy access to Kyoto from my town.
Right.
And things like that. It's just totally different, I guess, as travel.
That's fascinating. I wish I could sign up.
You gotta be a chef to do
right,
that.
Right, I know. I have to go to school first. Okay, so... this food hub concept, like you said, you know, the ecosystem, you know, it can be not only within Japan, but could be anywhere in the world, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah, but what's your plan?
What is my plan?
With food hub as well as whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I hope that it's kind of, we're not anti-mass produced food. I think it's alternative that like farm local, eat local concept is we should keep.
Mm.
But if mass produce, you know, if it push too forward, we lose that kind of culture.
Mm.
So I'm hoping to spread. It's not a hard thing to do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not a kind of franchisee system there. It's not that easy. Mm-hmm. To do that.
Right.
But I think, hope to spread within Japan also.
Mm.
That's what I'm hoping to do.
Yeah, I think by looking at what you're doing, you know, if I go to the supermarket, I think twice about what I should purchase.
Right.
And I think mass-produced food is necessary.
It is.
But if that hurts your health over a long time, more allergies, and when I grew up, no kid was allergic to anything.
Right.
And it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Right? Especially in Japan. I think America is more, you know, I had bigger exposure to, you know, mass-produced food.
True.
So luckily I grew up in Japan, but, you know, I think it's changing too.
Well, in Japan also, it's very exposed to mass-produced food every day.
Mm.
And we focus on the daily food instead of not special, like expensive restaurant food. Our food is very daily, accessible, cheap food, but with the good ingredients. So I think that makes a difference because it's everyday thing.
Mm.
So for your health, for your community, it has a small impact every day and a big impact in the long run, I think.
And, you know, I was thinking, I saw a movie, farmers getting so sick.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know why, but it's the exposure to all those chemicals for life. And farmers in your area, they would thrive. Good food, and they grow and consume without too much of unusual chemicals to your body.
We try not to use that. No.
So, well, that's wonderful. So where can we find your updates online?
There's a foodhub.co.jp, our website is... It's mainly in Japanese, but you can see photos of updates.
Mm-hmm. And the videos with the translation.
Yes,
we do. I was so moved. There are a couple different videos.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, the listeners, it's a food hub, foodhub.co.jp, not .com, .co.jp. All right. So we can, whoever wants to participate in the program, we can email you through via the website.
Yes, there's an information, info@ foodhub.co.jp,
okay.
The emails.
Right, so it's info@foodhub.co.jp.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, so thank you so much for joining us today, Taiji.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotaema.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.